Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Wow, that's good. You guys are awake, responsive. Being responsive is important. All right. I also want to say good morning again to the folks that are watching via Facebook. And, you know, one of the things you can always do is if you can't be here on a Sunday morning, you can watch us live on Facebook, or if you've missed something, you can go back. We archive all the videos are there for, I think, for the past 2 years, maybe 3 years are on there, I don't know. Today, I'll just put this out here for those, if there's somebody here, this is your first time here at Real Life Chapel, you haven't been here in a while, not so much of a sermon today as much as sharing the second half of a story that I began last week. And sharing kind of the story, you know, everybody has their what did you do on your summer vacation story. So that's kind of what ours is, but ours wasn't so much a summer vacation. It was, we were on sabbatical, and then sabbatical didn't go quite as we had planned. It turned into sick leave. But anyway, we're gonna talk about that. Last week I ended with my arrival at the UVA Medical Center. And, of course, I was there for bypass or what they call CABG surgery. Didn't realize that, you know, it took me a day or so to catch on to the lingo, you know, and everybody's, oh, yeah, that's right, you're a CABG patient. And I was like, man, what is that, like a Cabbage Patch doll? I mean, that's the only reference I had. You know, and it was a haircut thing or something. But so just in case you don't know, right, CABG or C-A-B-G is coronary artery bypass graft, because that's what they're going to be performing. So you become what is known as a cabbage patient. So if you missed last week, and I mean this, if you missed last week, please go to Facebook and watch the video so you get the whole story here. Or you can go on your way home, you know, you can go downstairs, and in the foyer we have CDs, just so you get the whole piece of this. Anyway, I don't want to repeat too much, but I do want to back up just enough to mention, you know, along with all of the cast of characters that were showing up in Virginia, right, in the city we had never been in, a hospital we had never heard of, you know, in a place where we knew no one, we knew one person, and the one person we knew wasn't there, but was now up here in Ocean Pines, and yet all of a sudden, you know, God had assembled a group of people that had relationship with us in some way or fashion, all at this one place. And it was just kind of mind-boggling, mind-blowing. And of course, unless you take in God as a factor, and then all of a sudden, wow. You know, why are our minds blown? You know, they are. Mine was. And yet, you know, sometimes I wonder, man, should I have really been surprised? I mean, God can do anything, right? And so that's what I hope that you get from the stories we share it. But I want to back up to mention, because not only did, you know, Stacy Chapman, talked about Tom and Stacy Chapman being there, someone had been part of this church for 5 years and had returned back to Virginia. Mentioned Sarah Wise, who had been a part of this church for years and been the primary caregiver for us in our home and like with our dog when we would go on vacation. Not only were they now both there showing up, and Sarah actually working in the hospital, but then also Pastor Chris Beckert, who was a part of this when we planted this, was now pastoring in Fredericksburg, and so then she's there. So, you know, we not only have all of the Virginia folks, but we have all the people that have been a part of Real Life Chapel all gathered in this room together, and it was just kind of like, wow, you know, God really was doing something. You know, Chris showed up at both Martha Jefferson Hospital as well as UVA Medical Center, you know, so she was a piece of that along the way. But I also wanted to share a passage, because last week I told you that part of my sabbatical, I had agreed to be studying and reading through the Psalms, and then specifically a portion of Psalms from Psalm 32 to Psalm 51. And I was going to be spending that duration. That was one of the things that I was going to be reading and studying. And the last psalm that I landed on before this thing took a turn and I entered the emergency room, was Psalm 50. So I didn't quite make it to 51, but I landed on Psalm 50, and I wanted to share with you, you know, that as I was reading that psalm, there were two verses that kind of like just jumped out at me, and one of them to the point I underlined it, you know, in my Bible, like I was talking about last week, another different passage, but I underlined this passage, and it was Psalm chapter 50, verse 14. It says this. It says, "Make thankfulness your sacrifice to God, and keep the vows you made to the Most High." Now, there's two really pieces that are going on in that verse, and one of them was more personal in the sense of, you know, keeping the vows you've made to God. You know, I don't know if you think about that, but when you and I enter into a relationship with Jesus Christ, when we accept Him as our Lord and Savior, it's just like a wedding ceremony. You're entering into covenant, a relationship with Him, and there's vows that we're really making. We're committing ourselves to Him as He's committing Himself to us. You know, and then when God called me into ministry, you know, and I answered that call, you know, it's like we entered into another covenant with Him and made a vow of pursuing and walking and trusting Him to make this my life. And even a vow, you know, when I was ordained with the Church of the Nazarene. You know, there's a vows that we make not only to the body of Christ at large, but to this slice of the pie in particular. And you know, so it was an important piece to me, because during our sabbatical, there were things that I was wrestling with and wondering about some of my covenants and commitments and what it looked like for my future ministry. And that's just a sidebar. That's not part of this story. But I want you to understand that these passages weren't just like random or without meaning. They had deep meaning personally to me as we were landing on them. But this top part was just kind of getting us ready, unbeknownst to us, as what we were getting ready to engage in. And it said, make thankfulness. You know, it's easy to be thankful when things are going good. How good are we at being thankful when things are going different than how we would plan them, right? Anyway, I want to take the moment, because I want to say this. I want to publicly declare that I am grateful. I am thankful for all of the medical personnel at both facilities, both Martha Jefferson Hospital and the UVA Medical Center, that provided care for me. I mean, I'm going to tell you, the technicians, the doctors, the nurses, no complaints from me along the way. I mean, I am thankful. I am grateful for all that they did. If you can't figure it out, I'm a fan, right? You know, you wonder, hey, I had bypass surgery. I'm here talking to you. I'm a fan, okay? So, but I also want to say how grateful I am. I want to publicly say I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful for all the folks, all the Virginia folks, you know, that God allowed to be a part of our story, part of this story that was going on, and the role they played in supporting and encouraging us. But I also want to say thank you to all of those back here at Real Life Chapel and for those around the world who were praying for us. Because, I mean, it really matters. It really matters. We could feel those prayers. And it's some of the most crucial times and critical times. And so I just wanted to go on record, you know, if somebody says, well, he never said thanks. We have it on video now. So back to the story. So within an hour of arriving at UVA, right, and I told you, I met my nurse, and she goes, wow, speak of the devil, and he will appear, and boom, and there I am, and like, wow, that was a great opening. So anyway, after she apologized all over herself when she found out I was a pastor, it's like, it's okay. So within an hour of arriving at UVA, you know, it just continued to be amazing. You know, Sarah, again, had brought Laura Lee over to the hospital, helped transport her there, and she went home. So now it's Laura Lee in the room, and my sister, who had driven down from New Jersey, was already at the hospital when I got there. you know. And then Dr. Bowser, who's the district superintendent, he's already there. Really, that was because he was lost. He could tell you whatever he wanted. He thought he was going to take a half-hour trip, and it turned into multiple hours. But I'm glad he was there. He was there for the right reasons. It's just he thought, well, that can't be that far. Right. Just like he thought, well, it can't be that far to get back home. Yeah, he had a long drive ahead of him. But, I mean, here we are, an hour in the hospital. And I mean, the district superintendent, my sister, my wife's there, and it's great. And then, but it makes you wonder, you know what I mean? Because sometimes you're like, okay, the guy who's in authority over me is like here right now. My sister's come down from New Jersey. So should I be, is this great? Am I grateful or is this dreadful? Because, you know, it's like if you're in the hospital and the guy with the long robe and the cross around his neck starts to show up and he's got bottles of oil and stuff, you kind of go, not sure that's good, right? So I was like, okay, it's awesome that they're here, but, you know, man, do I look that bad? You know, I mean, or as it's, you start to wonder. But anyway, in the next 24 hours, my mother and my stepfather and my niece Jessica would arrive from Delaware. They would drive down and make it there. My son Dustin and our daughter-in-law Lexi would fly in from Colorado, and they would be there. My daughter Samantha and my son-in-law Nick, along with our, at that time, six-week-old grandson Lawson, would arrive on the scene. And then a friend of ours, a friend for over 25 years, Dawn Owens, would come down. And so we had kind of like our own entourage, you know, in the waiting room. So, you know, we got like, throughout the duration of my time there, we had anywhere from 10 to 14 people in the waiting room at all times. And, you know, that, and I'm talking about 10 to 14 people that were there the entire duration of this event. Now, as for those that were here last week, as for the rented RV, right? I had somebody ask me that this week, right? Are we going to find out what happened to the RV? Like, man, we're getting ready to talk about my bypass surgery. You care about the RV? Anyway, no, it's good. So, as far as the rented RV that was still in Martha Jefferson parking lot, right, which everybody I told you they knew us as, we're the RV people, you know, and the RV that was in Martha Jefferson and Mr. Frodo, our 13-year-old Chibu, to let you know, Stacy Chapman not only took Frodo home that first night we went in the hospital, Frodo stayed with her at Tom and Stacy's house the entire 11 nights, 10 nights, and 11 days that we were there, and they cared for them. And not only that, but Stacy came back in her SUV and loaded it to the gills, trying to empty out our RV of all this 30-foot motorhome of all of our possessions. And then she, in tandem with Michelle Freeman back here, they coordinated the return, the retrieval, the towing and return of that RV back to the Richmond office and ultimately back to the Elkton office. And so they really did a lot of things as they were working together and coordinating all of that. So our entourage of 10 to 14 people are in the waiting room. And another challenge kind of emerged. You know, it was bad enough that I chose to start on this RV trip on Memorial Day weekend, right? Bad. So here we are now landing at UVA, and then now have 10 to 14 people in this entourage in the waiting room. And guess what? It's graduation weekend. Not only graduation weekend, but all the alumni reunions are happening. There's not a hotel room anywhere near the hospital. None. Everything's booked. There's nothing available. I don't know if any of you have spent much time in a waiting room, ever spent the night in a waiting room. They're not the most comfortable of places, right? And so, you know, we're trying to figure out, I say we, I was in the room, right? I wasn't figuring a whole lot, to be honest with you, right? But trying to figure out, you know, where is our family going to go? We've got our whole family here, and we're trying to figure it out. And if you recall, the one person I knew who lived in Charlottesville, Bud Reedy, was in Ocean Pines, right? And Bud called. And he said, you know, my wife and I are going to be in Ocean Pines for several days. And he said, the key to our house, and he told us where it was at. And he said, you know what? Just take our house. And he opened his home without question, without preparation, to my entire family. And our entire entourage stayed at his home for the whole duration. The timing was amazing. You know, again, it was one of those things where you got a problem, but you don't got a problem because God's got it. And so our entire home, our entire family, and his home was only 10 minutes from the hospital, right? And so they our entire family moves in and stays there during the duration. And then on top of that, Bud and Sally, on their return from Ocean Pines, slide by our house, pick up our vehicle, and bring it to us so that we are to go home, to drive home with. I mean, it just, every detail, every component that we were worried about or concerned about or wondering how, God had already put together a plan. Anyway, meanwhile, back at the unit, you know, or back at the ranch, but Dr. Tiemann, who was my surgeon, and you know, it's amazing. You'd realize you're changing in age, right? You know what's coming. Is when your surgeon walks in, and I'm thinking, does he have a driver's license? Right? I don't think he's shaved yet. You know? He looked like Josh Condon. He looked just like Josh Condon. I was just like, this is the heart surgeon? He's one of our best. I'm like, whew, okay. You know? Anyway, I was adjusting. I was adjusting to my age. And but Dr. Tiemann, Nicholas Tiemann was his name. Great guy. I'm a fan. You know, I'm here. He informed me that a few things had changed and that my CABG surgery was not going to be a triple bypass, but it was now going to be a quadruple bypass. It's like, wow, that's awesome. And so as a part of that, you know, they have a whole heart team there at the medical. They have a heart and vascular center, which we were in. Phenomenal place. So then, you know, they come around. And again, as I share with you in my story, you know, this whole heart thing has kind of been a part of my life growing up with my father's situation. So I was very, very familiar. And sometimes we just take things for granted and we don't think about those who have not been around any of those kind of things. And my wife had never been around that, had never understood the surgery or never encountered somebody that had been through that. And so, you know, they come around as they do now. You know, with an iPad, one of the team said, look, we've got a video for you we want you to watch because we want you to know what the procedure is going to entail. That's awesome, right? You know, I already kind of knew what this was going to be. She had no clue. She was still thinking that it was going to kind of be like the lab, the cath lab, you know, that something was going to go through here. And then they would, you know, she didn't know they were going to crack me like a lobster, right? And so we start watching the video, and you know, I'm watching it, and I'm looking at her, and I'm just seeing her kind of go, you know. And so by the time the end of the video, I mean, she's kind of freaked. I'm like, yeah, I really don't need to see, I don't need to see that again, you know. I'm headed there. She needed a little Charlie Brown Christmas, you know, after that. Some of you guys don't know. Anytime my wife sees something scary or traumatizing, she won't go to bed. She'll turn on Charlie Brown Christmas. Watch it for a few minutes because it takes her to a really good place. Then she's okay. Right? So it was like, watch that video, Charlie Brown Christmas. So the day before surgery, Dr. Tiemann comes back in. Of course, I will tell you, anybody that's been into a university hospital, right, which is a teaching hospital, I have way many stories I'm not telling here, but just, you know, nobody does anything by themselves, right? There's always multiple people gathered for every event when you're at a university hospital, okay? Which is interesting. And they talk out loud about directions because it's a teaching hospital. Sometimes when you're the patient, you don't need to hear the directions on stuff, right? It's not helping the experience, I will tell you. You know, when you're like somebody's turning around and reading something off of a package to the other person that's getting ready to do something to you, and it's like, we got this, right? We're good, right? You know, I'm listening. I can hear, you know, I got the, that's not right, right? Won't go into all the catheterization stuff, but anyway, the day before this surgery, and the day before the procedure, Dr. Tiemann came in. He said, look, I need to speak with you. There's a decision you're going to need to make. And, you know, he kind of schooled us on, you know, a vascular bypass versus an arterial bypass. And the quality of arterial was much better than vascular. And he wanted to do everything with arteries. They were going to use the internal mammary arteries on me. So they didn't even like, mine wasn't like a snip snip and they put something. Mine were left in place where they currently are and then just piped into my heart, right? Which is kind of a new thing they do, which is better. But then what he wanted to do, he wanted also, he said, I'd like to use your radial artery out of your arm, you know, that comes up here. And he said, now, here's the thing. He said, when we use the radial artery, he said, we prefer not to take it from the dominant hand. And I was like, okay. And he said, but we got a problem, he said, because you're left-handed. And he said, when they did your heart catheterization, they used the artery in your right arm. He says, so that's been compromised. We cannot use that. So if we're going to use one, we have to use it from your left hand. And he said, so I have to advise you. We have to get the green light from you to do this. And he said, because there is a risk involved. And I was like, okay, and you know, what's that? And he said, if we have a complication in surgery, we may have to amputate your hand. Right? Wasn't ready for that one. I was still trying to adjust all the heart stuff that I was familiar with. And I was like, what? You know, and he said, yeah, it's not like a big risk, but I have to be honest with you, there is a possible risk of that. So we have to inform you of that. I need you to make a decision in the next hour or two. Okay. So Laura Lee and I cleared the room, you know, because we had our entourage. You know, I kept telling them, because they would walk in with their team. You know, I told them, just so y'all know, I'm assembling my team as well. Right, because I got people in the medical industry. My sister's been a cardiology nurse for 30 years, you know, all this stuff. I was like, so we, you know, don't try to, like, throw something by us. We know what's going on here, you know. So just let them know. Got my team, too, you know. And so we had to clear the room because everybody was in there. And Laura Lee and I, you know, this was a moment we didn't make a decision. And we said, listen, we need to be alone. And because she and I wanted to pray about it because that's what we were going to do. We were going to talk about this, just she and I, but we were going to pray about it. We were going to take it to God, you know. And so we just prayed, Lord, give us peace in the direction of this and to make a decision here that's the right decision. And we prayed about it. I'll tell you about the discussion that ensued afterward, but I want to take you to this verse that you have in your program. Isaiah 41:10. Says this, don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand. Now, I'm going to tell you that this verse has very special meaning for Laura Lee and I for personal reasons not associated with this event or this story. But it's a very special verse to us, and it's one that just kept coming, flooding into my mind every day, multiple times a day leading up to surgery. You know, it was just one of those things. There are certain passages that you just kind of, look, and I'm not trying, you know, you guys know me if you've been a part of real life and how I am with the context of stuff and all of that. You know, I had no control in this. This verse was coming to my heart and coming to my mind just over and over again. And so, you know, we kind of talked about that when we were having the prayer. And it just kept coming to mind about, you know, we can trust God. And when we began to discuss our decision, you know, Lord, they said, she goes, well, you know, worst case scenario, because we had already kind of arrived at the worst case scenario, right? They kept telling us, oh, it could be this, but the worst case scenario would be, so here we are at the worst case scenario, so now we're trying to make this decision, and, you know, and she was trying to, you know, she was nervous, both a little bit nervous, I'll admit that, right? And she said, well, you know, I mean, at the worst case, she goes, you know, you would be able to play like the pirate thing with our grandchildren. Or, you know, that whole thing. No joke. That's what she said. I looked at her. I said, funny. Not funny. Right? This is my hand. You know, you ever tried to wipe with the opposite hand? Right? I'm sorry. That's what kept coming to my mind. I was like, hey, if you think that's a joke, you try that this afternoon. Don't email me about that, but... And I was like, that's not funny. Or, you know, I was like, man. So, but we sat there and we talked about it and we said, you know what? We're trusting God with our lives. We can certainly trust him with my left hand. Right? So he's holding us up with his right hand. So I just figured he and I were shaking on it at that point. And we went into it. But I would silently quote that verse throughout the day of my surgery. Just before surgery, like right before surgery, you know, and anybody here that's been through major surgery, you've had this moment, or if you've had a loved one that's going through, you know, there's that moment where, you know, everybody knows they're getting ready to take you back, and you're there, and everybody's wanting to come in and hug, or, you know, say goodbye. But not say goodbye because they don't want to jinx it, right? Everybody's got all these thoughts, you know, and it's weird because they're looking at you. You know that look, they're looking at you like this may be the last time that they see you, but they don't want to say that this is what they're thinking, but you know that's what they're thinking, right? And everybody doesn't want to say what they're thinking, you know, but it's like you're laying there, okay, love you too, love you, you know, and you go all that, and it was just that moment where everybody's thinking things, but nobody wants to say them. And I got to tell you, I want to thank God for our friend Dawn. You know, she was standing there, and she just said, she leaned over and touched my shoulder, and she goes, Frank, if anything happens, we'll take care of Laura Lee. That meant more to me than anything. Nobody wanted to say it, and I get it. I needed to hear that. Right, I wasn't. I just want to tell you, through this entire thing, I had absolute peace about my outcome. Because regardless of whether I survived surgery or not, I knew where I was going. I had absolute peace. That wasn't even in my thought process. Didn't even consider. Right? I check out. I'm going to be with Jesus. Good to go. Never even was worried about that, right? Not saying I was excited about what was getting ready to come. No, who wants to be cracked like a lobster? Nobody wants that going on, right? I wasn't excited about that part, but I wasn't worried about the outcome. But I was concerned about those I love if something should happen. And so I will be forever grateful for her having the, not audacity, but the courage to say what needed to be said in that moment that nobody else wanted to say. So anyway, they come to take me back, and we're headed to the OR. And I don't know, you know, there was a moment I felt both ways within seconds, but we're headed to the OR. And the guy taking me down there, which I'm going, shouldn't I be out yet? Shouldn't I be out? Why am I... Like, I thought I'm going to be out before I'm going down the hall. I should be out. I'm, like, looking at people as we're going by them. And, you know, I'm like, okay, there's the doors. Shouldn't I be out? Right? I mean, I've had lesser surgery where I don't remember barely leaving the ER room I was in, let alone getting into the OR. This is a major deal, right? And as I'm wheeling down, the guy's like, and I don't know why he said this. I don't know if he said it. If God was speaking through him, he said, are you afraid? And I was like, what the? You know, I said, I did. I looked at him. I went, who wouldn't be, man? You know? Yeah, I'm not worried about my outcome, but I'm not really excited about this. And I mean, going to the OR, I'm still going, shouldn't I be out? Right? And then I'm looking around. They're introducing me to people in the OR. The head nurse is like, oh, so this is so-and-so. She'll be taking care. And I'm like, shouldn't I be out? You know? And it's like everything's shiny. I see tools. Like, I should be out. Right? And the guy's like, can you move over onto this table? It is the left hand, right? Is that right, Mr. Shorts, the left hand? I'm going, yeah, shouldn't I be out? You know? But I will tell you, somewhere along the line, I was out. I mean, I was gone. I mean, I remember them. They had me move over onto the table. Which the table? It's like this skinny metal thing, man. I was like, it's not even room for me on this table. Didn't need to know the rest, but there's a lot of shiny stuff. It's like, didn't need to see any of that. But anyway, so I'm gone. I'm out. And so I awaken, and you know how, like, sometimes you wake up really slowly and groggily and just, you know, I don't know if that's a word, but groggy, groggily. I didn't have any of that. I woke up with a tube down my throat. Yeah. And I woke up. And I was like, whoa, whoa. And I started freaking. Right? And of course, immediately the guy was like, you know, because I started like trying to come, and he was like, hold on, buddy, hold on, buddy. He said, look, it's all right, relax. He said, we're going to get that out. You know, and I was just like, you know, and so it was weird because I'm sitting here thinking, I'm going, these are my first thoughts. Waking up for surgery, I'm going, wow, right? To myself, because you can't really, wow. Yeah, I said, wow, I survived surgery and I'm going to drown here on the table in the ICU? Because that's what it felt like. I know that's totally irrational. Completely irrational. I'm not going to claim anything was rational that was going on. But I literally felt like, in fact, I started biting the tube, but I was biting it and trying to move it to the side. So I, in my mind, irrational, but I'm trying to think so I can get air around it, right? Because I'm like, I got to breathe. I'm going to die, you know, and I'm freaking because I feel like I'm drowning, you know. And so I'm trying to do this. And he's like, look, we're going to get that out. We're going to get it out. And they try to relax me, relax me. It was another 45 minutes before they got it out. You know, again, because they have to get a doctor. Doctor has to come down, has to be there, part of this deal before they pull it out. It was all good. Not my favorite memory. But anyway, you know, the next 48 hours in ICU were challenging, you know, because all of a sudden, you're waking up and things are different. You got all kinds of stuff connected to you, and right, and your family's coming in. It's real brief. I remember, I think at one time, and again, so I asked Lord Lee. I said, you know, I remember everything really good till right then, and I got a few days where it's like I recall moments. You know, like I remember they gathered like our entire entourage and let them in the room for like a brief moment. Then they all had to leave. And they only could come in like two at a time. And I remember them all coming in. If I remember this correctly, they're all standing there. And then a guy who finally got the tube out of my throat says, hey, can I get you something? And I thought he was honest. I thought he was being genuine. And I was like, yeah, man, I could use a sweet tea, right? And he's like, I can't do that. And I was like, man, why'd you ask? You know, because I was thirsty. He asked me what I wanted. He didn't ask me what I needed, right? So, but that didn't work. But over the next 48 hours, a family would come and go. You know, Pastor Dale and Aaron were down there. I remember them. I'll be honest with you. I remember you being there. I remember you in the room briefly. Don't remember much else. I'm just saying, was not a good day for me. But anyway, so, you know, here's another thing. You know, my family started taking cheap shots at me. I'm like in recovery from major surgery, right? And there's like no mercy, right? My family starts making fun of me. And they're out in the waiting room making fun of me, you know? So I mean, no mercy again, you know? I'm under pretty strong painkillers, you know? And I'm recovering from major surgery. And so, you know, my wife comes in and she's talking, and I guess I interrupted her. And then I apologized. I said, oh, I'm so sorry, honey. did I interrupt you? I said, I love you, you know? And she like looked around. So next thing I know, she's out in the waiting room. They're all saying, she's telling them and they're going, she goes, I think I'm going to have counseling. She goes, Frank has a heart. And then they started joking about, the Grinch and his heart growing three sizes and all this stuff. I'm like, man, I'm in the room. I'm recovering and they're making fun of me out now in the, the waiting room. But yeah, support from your entourage. That's what it was. Anyway, 2 days later, the nurse would have me and her plan. She said, you're walking out of here today. She goes, you're going to walk out of the ICU unit. And she goes, and I'm going to have you walk all the way to the step down unit to your room. And I was like, that sounds awesome. It was not really good. They make you do that every day. It was not fun. But, you got the whole thing doing all that. And she said, don't walk like an old man. You're not old. And then I go, okay. And I try to straighten up. And I was like, that wasn't good. And anyway, I made it most of the way. I did not make it all the way. I did make it around the corner because I had to make the turn where the waiting room was. And the entire entourage was there cheering me on, And yeah. As I'm walking around going, yeah, y'all making fun of me. And there was another gentleman, my roommate, Brad Akers from Virginia, was there standing with my family, cheering me on. Brad had been my roommate, which was kind of funny. I mean, he's like 6'8 or something, right? We were both in the same room. He was in the bed next to me. Huge guy, and he had gone through surgery like 2 days before I did, and then went into AFib the night before my surgery. And they had this big event. They're coming in because it's very typical for people normal to go into AFib occasionally after they've come out of that. And anyway, I talked with Brad because Brad tracked me down. This is a whole sidebar. Brad tracked me down a month after I'd gotten home, and he called here to the church looking for me because he wanted to see how Pastor Frank was doing in his recovery. Because he had sat on the other side of the curtain and had listened to prayer after prayer and conversation after conversation where God was a center of it. And we had no realization the impact it was going to have on he and his family on the other side of the curtain. And he and I have stayed in touch. Anyway, made it most of the way, got into the room and stepped down the unit. Next 4 days included great moments and some I never, ever want to experience again. But I slowly gained enough strength, did the things that you've got to do, and was discharged on June 13th. Bud and Sally, they came down. They actually came down, let our family remain in their home, and they went and stayed in a relative's home rather than returning to their home so that we could have it, and came and visited me a couple of times while I was in the hospital. When we got ready to head home, my daughter and son-in-law had already gone ahead of us and had purchased a recliner and gotten our home prepped for us and ready, for us to return. My son, of course, was there, so now our vehicle was there, and my son drove us home from the hospital, back here. And Laura Lee's parents stayed at our home with us for several days to help us get resettled. And so we had just a great support system, all around during the whole time. And why share all of this, right? Why share the story other than just to tell you what happened? It is more than that. 1 Peter 5:12, and I want to borrow something from Peter here. 1 Peter 5:12 says this. He's given explanation for this letter that he's written. He says, I have written and sent this short letter to you with the help of Silas, whom I commend to you as a faithful brother. And then he says this. My purpose in writing is to encourage you and assure you that what you are experiencing is truly part of God's grace for you. Stand firm in this grace. So I kind of want to steal this from Peter a little bit. And I want to say to you, why am I sharing this? I'm sharing this because I want to encourage you and I want to assure you what you're experiencing. And I don't know what that is because it can be very many different things. But what you're experiencing is God's grace for you. And you need to stand firm in that grace. See, I think we have a misunderstanding of grace. We're going to explore that more in 2020. But I think there's a sense that we think, and it's not this. Grace is not just this. And I've said this before. Grace is not just this cloak of invisibility that we just use to cover our sins and make them go away. We treat grace like that. We interpret grace like that. We think of grace like that. And that is a massive misunderstanding of God's grace. That is like this much of God's grace. God's grace isn't just some kind of cloak that you throw over that makes your sin go away or it covers it up. It's very, very different than that. There's a quote I put on the front of your programs. This is just something that I wrote down that I felt like God was saying to me. It says, sometimes the favor of God, you know what that is? That's God's grace, right? Sometimes the grace of God is only revealed or demonstrated in the midst of the most difficult times. Here's the thing, folks. You know, like that song that we sang, like the band Mercy Me, they write in that song, Wishful Thinking, it says, without suffering, grace is hard to see. Grace isn't just about throwing a blanket and covering up stuff so you're good to go. Right? But sometimes without difficulty, without suffering, grace is hard to see and hard to understand. See, grace is the power of God. That's what it is. It's not a blanket you cover stuff. Grace is the power of God that empowers you, that enables you. Right? It's God's power and presence that empowers us during difficult situations. It turns trials into triumph. It provides us with strength to endure and to overcome adversity. That's the grace of God. And the grace of God is what allows us to shine in the darkness, to be a light to others as we're going through those difficult things. That's the grace of God. So there is one last thing I want to share with you. You know, you get stuff, right, when you go to the hospital. So, hey, if you have bypass surgery, you can get a nice tote bag too. Right? So, just saying, if you were really looking for this. They give you other stuff. I only brought one thing. Along the way, this was this really cool thing. I got this bra. Hey, it was my first one. It's a big deal. You know? There was a fitting and everything. So there's this thing. This was created. It's called SternaSafe, right? And this is kind of a cool development. I don't know if you've ever seen this. So I'm going to demonstrate this for you. Just because your day wouldn't have been as fulfilling if you don't get to see this. So you put this thing on, and what happens, let's see. So you put this thing on, and then you got this Velcro strap that you kind of make it kind of snug, right? And then this locks in. Yeah. So this locks in, and here's the point and purpose of this. You know, for a long time, they send you home, and you're a cabbage patient or some kind of open heart, they send you home with this heart pillow, right, which is awesome. You know, and so anytime you sneeze, or you're going to cough, or you're going to do something, you know, you take the pillow and you put it like right here and kind of hold yourself, because those things are painful. I'm just going to tell you. But somebody got smart about it and invented this. And so the idea is this kind of, you wear it and it kind of is snug on you, keeps things together. And then at the moment, if you're going to have a sneeze or a cough, you cinch it right at the moment, and it just kind of holds everything together, right? And I'm just telling you, this thing is awesome. It is amazing. And I mean, it was a lifesaver multiple times. But as I got thinking about this, you know, it's kind of like a hug at just the right moment, right? It's like the perfect hug at the right moment. And so I thought, man, you know, this could help some of our hugaholics out there with their problem, with their addiction. And so I'm looking into this. I'm going to see if these are not cost effective or not, if we can't buy these in bulk. And I'm just thinking if we could, you know, when it comes that moment and you just feel like you got to hug me or something, you could take care of it yourself, right? Kind of a self-hugging thing, right? And then we could have our greeting time. And when we say, we don't even have to, you know, hey, hug somebody in the name of Jesus. You could just go, good morning. Oh, thank you. Right? And that will be the deal. Listen, I share my story with you because I want you to see how God was all over it. His handprint was all over it. He was involved in it, and how he weaved things together that we couldn't have possibly orchestrated if we tried. And he met every need, and he took care of every detail, right? Because he can be trusted. And I pray that when you're facing your difficulty and your adversity, lean into him. Don't lean into other stuff. Don't lean on other people. Lean into him. Right? The people you need will be there because they'll be leaning in him and leaning on him too. Right? God's grace is not just something that covers our sin. God's grace is his presence and his power that enables us to get through these things.